where we are.
And we'd like to ask that this presentation, please try to finish by 3, and I know I'm putting some limitations on it, but I have to be gone. If we don't get finished, I'm sure Senator Sturdzielewski would be happy to continue it for me. In the absence of Commissioner, we will have the Deputy Commissioner, Bill Ladwig. And it's, I was just teasing you. I think an appendectomy is a good reason.
Death was the only reason.
So, Bill, would you proceed in any manner that you would like to? Would you like questions as you end a presentation, or shall we interrupt? What's your pleasure?
For the record, my name is Bill Ladwig, Deputy Commissioner of Administration for the Department of Corrections. And I thought perhaps I might start out with a little of the where we've been, where we're at, and where we're going to try to go. I understand the committee has questions in areas in neighborhood programs and treatment type programs. Susan Humphrey Barnett and Nadine Winters can address specific questions in those areas. Over the past 3 years, the Department of Corrections has expanded greatly through cooperative effort of the executive and the legislative branches of government, putting the resources into the department. We've added approximately 800 new beds, opened new facilities, closed a couple of antiquated, outdated facilities. Added staff, increased the number of people providing programs to the inmate population, increased the number of programs, the number of people who have participated in a program in the past 3 years. I have a chart here.
Do you need any help with that, Bill?
No. This is the third year for this chart. We update it every year for the committee. Showing our growth line. As the commissioner is fond of saying, if this were the profit chart for the private enterprise, it would be in the top five, probably a Fortune 500 company. We provided to members of this committee and the legislature, I believe, yesterday morning, the University of Alaska's report on the future population. And the population is obviously what's driving us and making us react. And I'd like to expand the us from the Department of Corrections to the partnership that we've developed in the past 3 years, executive and legislative, and include the judiciary. It's not a problem that we as a department are capable of solving by ourselves. It's going to have to be a team effort. Basically, that's a very quick overview of where we've been, where we're trying to go. Do you have specific questions of myself or staff?
Bill, did you plan on introducing Nadine or Susan?
Yes, Susan Humphrey Barnett.
They can just come right up with you for light. Sure. Wait. Are there questions at this time?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
One thing that I'm interested in, and I don't know if I have correct information or not, but with the increase in numbers of beds and certain of the institutions being devoted to certain kinds of care, I've heard that it's been necessary to transfer so many patients, people that are incarcerated in and out of these facilities, that some of the programs are suffering and that you're not able, perhaps, to carry out the purpose that institution has really been designed for. And I would give one example of the possibly the restitutional center that was established. Could you comment on that general
issue? Sure. I think what you stated is accurate to some degree. I don't see it as being accurate necessarily with respect to the restitution center, we can talk a little bit about that, but in a general sense, when the prison population approaches capacity, pretty much the only transfers that are made are those that are made for bed space reasons, and we lose our ability to transfer people to the programs that they need, and that really, it does become a problem. With respect to the restitution center, could I give you just a little update on where that is? Is that we opened the first restitution center on November 15th. It cost approximately $550,000. Annualized, that would be approximately $850,000. So it was actually substantially less than the $1,074,000 that we originally anticipated and it was appropriated. Because there is such a backlog of misdemeanor cases in the Anchorage area, we did, when we opened it up, concentrate on that population, and we put all the nonviolent misdemeanors in the restitution center. The restitution center is full now. Primarily, it's full of misdemeanors. So as not to subvert the intent of the DWI statutes, we have any people that are serving mandatory sentences in a misdemeanor in a restitution center performing community service work for a period of time equal to their mandatory sentence. And that goes along with, I think, the language that's in the bill itself, which stated that if anybody is serving terms of less than 5 days, they should be doing community service work if it's available. So that, I guess, we carried it a little further than that, actually. We're currently making efforts to place nonviolent felons in the center and identifying those inmates that fit the criteria of not having any previous offenses involving violence or any sex offenses. We're identifying those inmates and getting them ready to place in, but we have, in the beginning, pretty much centered on the misdemeanors.
Ma'am Chair, I'd like to explore that a bit further. And that does talk a bit about the restitution center. I don't see that as really just handling the DWIs. I mean, they're in and out, so they're really not, that wasn't the intent, the major intent of, of really that legislation. And what I'm wondering, we have a lot of DWIs, and I imagine that will continue. Has there been any major effort to find a facility that could take care of that, offer the programs that are needed, see that they really serve out those sentences, but that they're not taking some of the space from the other facilities, because that seems to be a block. And, for instance, if you're running the bakery, say at Lemon Creek, which is to house the harder criminals, are you taking away by trying to make facilities do more than they were designed for? I've just heard a number of complaints that we're putting people in, we're not carrying out the program that really the facility was designed for, so that even though you're accommodating the prisoners in terms of finding the place for them, a bed, that you're just not able to do the job with the programs. And if that's true, I wonder how you're approaching it in terms of capital requests and what's being done, because obviously everything you brought in this report from the University of Alaska says your population is growing very rapidly. So if we have a crisis situation, you know, what's being done about it? And, you know, I'd like some comments along that line. If we're not doing the job that the institutions are really designed for, I think we've got a serious problem developing.
I think that it's certainly more appropriate that the harder core criminals are serving the time in the heavier duty bed space, and that where possible, the misdemeanors really should be in them, whether it's a restitution center or some other type of community placement. I think that's appropriate. And we've made a major effort in filling up all the community beds that we have. I don't know that we've asked for a whole lot more.
Nadine, if I could follow up on Senator Zaluski's question. You know, we were quite supportive and instrumental in getting through the legislation that did establish the restitution centers, with the thought in mind that that there could be some assistance to the victims of the crimes committed, like burglaries, et cetera, when they, and that to me, and as a voter on the bill, was one of the reasons for supporting the legislation. And I think what's been expressed here is some frustration on our part that we're not seeing, even though it's a short period of time, we're not seeing a move towards accomplishing what we hoped the legislation would accomplish, since it's all taken up with mostly taken up with DWIs. I think that's the message that's trying to be gotten across.
Well, I think there really has been a very strong effort towards putting the nonviolent felons in there. We've identified every nonviolent felon in the system who could possibly be appropriate for the restitution center setting, and then we've sent those lists back out to the superintendents saying, evaluate each one of these, do the background checks, make sure there is no violent offense or sex offense in the person's background, and if appropriate, then send them to the restitution center. So there really has been an effort to do that. One other comment I want to make is, although it's not the same as having a large chunk of restitution money collected, we did, in the first month of operation, the restitution center inmates did contribute over 1,000 hours of community service work to Anchorage. So, something.
Well, that of course helps the community there, but right. Doesn't do anything towards the restitution of those. But and we're not. I can't speak for the subject, but we're not especially complaining. I think what we're trying to find is how do we help carry out the mandates of the court, find housing so that you're not making an appointment to go to jail with a DWI like you would if you're checking in a hotel, and try to find some relief for this bed space that doesn't mean building another $24 million facility. There must be an answer somewhere, and that's what we're searching for as well. How do we help?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I would like to ask, and it doesn't have to be at this meeting, but to really have a real snapshot of the population that's out there and what the particular facilities are really designed and being used for. For example, the pre-trial facility, the restitution center, Lemon Creek, and to get some good sense of what those facilities are, what they're designed for, how they're being used, if there are alternatives such as again a lower cost facility for the DWIs, they could be in a situation that's not the same as a jail facility, and yet be incarcerated and have available the kind of training programs and so on. But if we're mixing those into some of the other programs and destroying their effectiveness, we're not really meeting part of that constitutional challenge of trying to rehabilitate and do the other things that we have to do. And I've just heard enough comment on it to make me very uneasy, and I can see much of it's got to be a result of the fact that your population is growing so rapidly and your space is very limited. But in order to make the case, I don't think you're making the case. The commissioner goes to the press and makes the case for more beds. What kind of beds, where? I think that's what we need to know, and that's part of our responsibility. But that case has to be made.
Part of the problem, I think, in Alaska is that you've got a different kind of system than in many other states that have county jails for short-term offenders and unsentenced offenders, and then they have a state prison system for the long-term offenders that can have specific programs designed for heavier duty felons, if mm-hmm. you will. And in Alaska, we have a different system, and we also have the various regions, so that we have a facility like Lemon Creek, which has to function sort of in a dual role as a state prison, as a local detention center, and that necessarily does add
sure.
another layer of confusion to the problem.
I think our problem, Bill and Nadine, I was hopeful that as we're getting an overview, that, you know, we all know it's crowded, We all know the population's going up, but I don't know anything about the population. And I was hoping that we'd get a picture of what we do have in the state, what's wrong with it, and what we need to do to get things better. Maybe I'm saying this before you finished the presentation. Did you have...
I can give you a little bit of an answer to that. I did bring a count sheet along. this is as of January 21st. We had just over 1,200 sentenced male felons in the prisons, and approximately just over 400 unsentenced male felons, which out of the total population, I'm not counting any of those that were in any type of halfway house or restitution center placement, so out of a total population of about 2,000, certainly we have a lot of the heavier duty felons. That's over 1,600.
Thank you, Susan. Are there questions from members of the committee? Megan, do you have anything to add?
I was just to mention that we will advance a retrial opening this year, and then in 1987 we'll have another 328 beds with the sword facility. That's kind of the text.
In the presentation from the mental health groups, when they were talking about API and the problems they're having there, their appeal was that the criminally insane was not, that API was really not situated. That was causing them a lot of problems, in other words, for the criminally insane to be in API. Are you looking at, in your department, and is it true that you will have a unit in sort for the criminally insane, and this will relieve the API situation? You're not?
That's
not
the case, no.
Well, Madam Chair. Just pursue that. We were told the other day by the Commissioner of Health and Social Services that that department continues to feel that the forensic patients, those awaiting trial, those who are not guilty by reason of insanity, and those who are guilty but mentally ill, would be more appropriately handled away from API, and that they are working to have a wing at Seward accommodate those people. Because I asked them, you don't want them at you can't have them in Eagle River because the community didn't like it. You don't want them on the campus of API. Where do you want them? And they said, am I correct? We're working to have, we expect to have a wing constructed at Seward to handle this class of offenders.
I can tell by your eyes that
this is discussing it, I think, is what, and I think that somebody...
Specifically the Seward prison, they were saying?
Yes.
Right.
And that they had already talked to the city manager in Seward, and that the community would not object because this facility was across the way from the population center.
Madam Chairman, Senator Josephson, unfortunately this appears to be an incident where our partnership, if you will, was had a little breakdown in communication. I'm not aware of any discussion or plan to add to or modify the Seward facility as it's currently proposed. If I remember correctly, and this is not to dodge the issue, but the legislature 2 years ago made massive infusions of money into the mental health program, the SOTA program, administered by the Department of Health and Social Services for the specific purpose of treating our population.
I think there is a wide gap of lack of communication in another of your partners, and that's the legislature. It just seems to me like... And that's the reason for this. It seems that we're not talking with each other. And frankly, I'm a bit taken aback. It seems to me like this is something that needs to be looked at very carefully.
You are correct, Madam Chairman, and I think I feel the same sense of frustration that you feel. And I think of us are behind the power curve, if you will, because when, for example, when the restitution center concept was first thought of, and by the time it's brought to fruition somewhat later, the conditions and so forth in the population have substantially changed. We haven't been able, for whatever multiplicity of reasons there might be, been able to change as quickly as the environment that makes us react and make growth. And both of us are behind the power curve, and I honestly don't have an answer.
Well, I would suggest then that perhaps we need a good work session. Maybe we need to get in people that are involved with sewer, the people involved with the Kremlin Center, or the whatever that word is I never can get, and Dylan, you or whomever, and see how, if there's not some way, we can have to come to some solution of this problem, whether without some of us going around thinking this is happening when it isn't, or others thinking it's happening when it isn't, and we're not even talking to each other about it.
Madam Chair?
Are you confused?
Yeah, I guess I would thought there was a lot of hesitancy on the commissioner's point the other day regarding that it was something they really desired, but I think they felt they were meeting resistance within your department about the sewer situation, and that's what they would like to do. So I guess that was the feeling I got from the commissioner the other day.
It appears like by default and that we're being backed into a position that we had no foreknowledge of.
Well, I apologize for that. We're just,
Madam Chair,
two and two together.
just to, you know, maybe the best thing is you know, obviously it's unfortunate that the commissioner could not be on hand today, but I think we need a good sense of where the state's going. We have the population figures. We have seen repeated headlines and editorials about the problems in space. We know that those are not going away. We have not seen a program that would lead us to some solution. We have a very large capital budget that has been proposed, but it does not include answers to this. We don't know what is needed. Are there low-cost alternatives, for instance, the miscreants, the DWIs? Are there additions to the system that need to be made, or are we playing a game of checkers out there, just moving people to provide a bed, but it's getting worse and worse and worse and worse? API is decertified. We have a major problem there. They have to have a lot of additional care to handle the criminally insane. The public is going to demand it, and just safety demands it. So they're looking for a way out. It seems to me that the departments have to talk together. You mentioned in your earlier remarks that the court system was involved, and yet I see no plan that, in fact, there's a group that's working to bring about those changes. I mean, we have a responsibility to see that a crisis doesn't develop. Maybe there's a crisis now. I don't know. I don't have a good sense of it.
I'd like to pursue that. You know, I scanned the summary of the forecast, and as I remember, in the worst-case scenario, we could have over 20,000 prisoners by the year 2000, which is 14 years from now. Clearly, the legislation passed since 1980 moves those figures, and we may need to reevaluate that. But instead of our just receiving reports and letting them gather dust, it seems to me there's an alarming note in them. And I don't expect the Department of Corrections to tell us how to solve that, but there ought to be...
I like their input.
But yeah, there ought to be a forum in which educators and health and social service people and corrections and legislators participate to see how we're going to head that off. Now, do I understand, do you know, is it true that we have a higher percentage of people incarcerated than any other state per capita? Is that correct?
We're number four. Senator.
Number four. Is that a function?
We're mean, huh? Mm-hmm. We're just mean, huh?
Is that a function of the population, the number of young male adults relative to the total population, or is it due to other factors? You know?
I am not a statistician, Senator, and I'm going on what the university says the there are several driving causes of the male population between 18 and 45, I think, is the, one of the breakdowns, the unemployment rate, the general population growth, several items contribute to it, but if I recall the summary of the report, there was not any one cause that was more driving than the others.
Well, I mean, I don't, you know, since I've been elected, I think the people of Alaska are pretty good. I don't think they're bad people. And are we the fourth worst people in the union, or what does this all mean?
No, it just says we incarcerate at a rate faster than 46 other states.
Is there anything that then in your bringing us up to date, anything more that you would like to add today?
Madam
or are you prepared to present some more material?
Nadine can address specific questions if you have them on inmate work programs, but I would like to offer a response to the point Senator Sturkowski made a few minutes ago. Is there bed space out there? The quick response is yes. How do we solve the problem? I honestly don't have an answer, and it is nothing that's capable of being solved by the department by itself. It takes, if you believe the university's report, it's going to take some legislative action to perhaps ameliorate the effects of the criminal code. I'm not saying a repeal, fine-tune it, perhaps cut a year off the end of the sentence, for example. Good time provisions. It takes a combination of modification to the law, perhaps, by the legislature, the your ability to appropriate resources, the executive branch of government to utilize those resources in the most efficient way possible, and the judicial branch to look at their impact on keeping people in unsentenced status, for example. It's nothing that we can solve by ourselves or the legislature and executive can solve by themselves. We've got to work together. Well, we're ready to try.
Well, I'll tell you, I am so frustrated at this point with the lack of any plan for meeting a court-mandated deals. Only plan we've seen is throw more money. And frankly, I'm willing to spend some time on it. Are you?
Yes, ma'am.
And I'm willing to ask the courts to spend some time on it. I'm willing to ask social services to spend some time on it. But we need to do something. To me, this is just sitting by and each one saying, well, we can't do it by ourselves, so we're just not going to do anything. And maybe I'm being too hard, and I don't mean to be, but I'm blown away today. Okay?
I concur, Madam Chair. Let me ask this. Are you planning expansion of facilities to incarcerate felons in South Central Alaska beyond the Seward campus? Are there any other sites that you're looking at or planning to provide?
There are several communities, Senator, that have approached us with the potential of building a facility in their community. Kodiak, for example, has approached us, Valdez, Delta, acquiring more of the wildlife facility for this isn't indicated. So we're not sitting back doing nothing, if you will. We're working with the communities, trying to find what's available. the existing pipeline camps, for example, could perhaps be converted to some custodial type of facility. We are working with the communities to find out what's available.
Well, when you think about it, I mean, this is Senator Fairclough. This is my concern. If we, as you say, if we just sit here with the legislature talking to the legislature and the corrections talking to itself, and not having a coordinated effort, we're going to wind up in 14 years, likely, with more people incarcerated than the entire city of Juneau. And then living in the entire state of Juneau.
in our capital city. That is a ridiculous outcome, and I don't know whether it requires earlier intervention with troubled youth, or whether it requires a strict type of probation system, or whether it requires the kind of thing they're doing in Florida with home monitoring, where they have a little device on your leg and they track your whereabouts. But we have to find the answers that we don't see here.
Well, you know, we look at this $19 a barrel, and maybe it'll go some more. And what I'm wondering is, where is this money supposed to come from to just keep building buildings in communities that you're talking with without a plan for alleviating any of the problem or finding where the real problem is, or how we can fulfill our job as kind of overseers and providers of those things that are needed in order to carry out the good of the public out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just... You know, I think it's time to get started.
I'd like to ask a kind of a direct question. And we know what at least some of the problems are. Do we have a plan for the growth of the Alaska Correctional Facilities in terms of philosophy of treatment and in terms of how you're going to house people? In other words, a physical plan and also how you plan to move ahead to handle the correctional facilities in, say, the next 5 years? Does a plan exist?
I'm not sure you can say it's all on paper, but there are definitely plans to try and keep all low-risk type offenders in community settings, and some of them can even be, as Senator Josephson mentioned, maybe on home detention. I think the whole problem can't be solved by one thing. We're just going to have to chip away doing, we're going to have to build more beds for the hardcore guys. We're going to have to put all the low custody people out of the expensive space. We're going to have to look at presumptive sentencing and fine tune it where necessary.
Who's doing that?
The Judicial Council should have a report out on presumptive sentencing shortly.
One aspect, but you were giving us, Susan, three or four or five things that we need to do. And this plan, I would assume the answer to your question is no. That's what I heard, right? There is no five-year plan as such, right? Maybe. And what we're trying to do is help you and help us.
Yeah. Madam Chairman, the problem with a plan is there's so many other... I sound like I'm dodging the issue, but I don't know how to make a plan that can be impacted so quickly by so many different things. A passage of a new law, this is one example of an item that will throw our best laid plan, entirely askew.
But if you have a plan, and somebody comes in with a new law, you can say, okay, here's how it will affect our plans in the future, or here's the plan, how are you going to counteract that when you enact this law? Right now, we're just enacting laws because groups of people want it, and it's for the safety of this group or the safety of that group, or enough pressure from this one, enough pressure from that one, without looking at the consequences. And to me, that's irresponsible. And it's not just, I'm not saying you're irresponsible, I'm saying we're irresponsible as well for doing it. But what have we got to judge that by if we don't have a goal to be reached somewhere down the road? And I don't hear that we have it. And here we've been taken to court. And we've been told you're not doing it right, or you're not meeting the needs, or something. And I just don't see a way of solving that problem. So I think that, I apologize to the committee for getting so brought up over this, and to you. But I think it's time that we took a leadership role in getting people together, at least talking with each other, about looking down the road and how we meet these needs. Because I've been here 8 years, and I haven't seen anything yet that says, well, you shouldn't do this because you're going to impact the courts this much. And this is what, you know, you get a fiscal note that's put as low as possible by somebody so they get a bill through, rather than looking at all the ramifications. And it bothers me. Before I say thank you for coming with us and go down and start preparing letters to say let's get together, Senator, do you have anything you'd like to...
I guess when we talk about plans, if I might, they're all neat things to have, but I've seen the so-called five-year plan with education, and it's not all that encouraging. in our particular case where I live, we have a five-year plan, and the public kind of think, well, that's what we're going to do 5 years from now, but it's such a modification each year. We were supposed to go to bond this year for a school, and in 1 year, all of a sudden the population drops, that thing's scuttled. You can't do it. So if we come up with a plan, I would hope that somehow there's the word out that, hey, this is just a guide, and it isn't something that by hell or high water, whatever, we're going to do that, because it may not be the way.
Well, certainly, Senator, so I wouldn't have a plan and say build three jails if you don't need them.
Yeah, I guess my concern is we keep throwing around plans as though that's the total solution, and I think ultimately it's going to boil down to dollars anyhow.
Well,
and I think your point is well taken. Where are we getting the dollars?
Madam Chair, if you don't have a request before you to do something, then you're not going to do anything. If you have a case made that you want to get the miscreants off, or you want to do this or that to make the facilities that are out there work, plus start to handle the overflow, then you're moving ahead. You don't plan just for a plan. You plan because it points a direction. I see no direction in what we have. That's what we need. That's all we're saying, that you think about where you go. It's just like I can remember when Bob Palmer was in and telling us that we needed to have 500,000 acres of barley raised out there, and then we'd have a viable agricultural thing. Well, Senator Vic Fisher and I said, all right, come back and bring us a plan of how you're going to get 500,000 acres out there. Well, we're told we might have 20,000 prisoners in not too many years. We better jolly well start to figure out how we're going to get there. You know, that you better start to think about how you're going to house those people. That's all we're saying. It isn't a plan for a plan's sake. It's one that's going to help you manage what you've got to manage. You've got to manage a lot of people. But you want those systems to work. You don't want to just put them in a bloody bed that's not designed for whatever their issue might be. That's all I think we're saying, is let's find out where we're going.
Madam Chair, I think this would be an appropriate committee also to discuss the specific problem of sex offenders. Because, as the report indicates, I think more than half of your felony offenders, male felony offenders, are sex, in the sex offender category. Am I right in that?
No, not quite. Okay. It's
maybe more.
We have 540 sex offenders.
Okay. And I guess they run the gamut in terms of what they did, from forcible rape to other kinds of actions or penetration.
Very few third degree sexual assault or sexual abuse of a minor.
As I understand it, many of these.
What's third degree?
That's with first and second being the more serious. The third degree offenders generally don't get jail time. It's
a touching or
maybe less than that.
As I understand it, because let us say a prisoner comes in for a felony sex offense, he has 7 or 8 years to serve. Counseling is in short supply, and the counseling for that individual may begin in the fourth or fifth year of incarceration, right? So that he gets help before he gets to the end of the cycle, but not fresh after the offense is identified and he has acknowledged his guilt. What troubles me is, number one, I don't know, as I sit here, I don't know whether that delay is itself therapeutically harmful or whether we would have a better therapeutic result with earlier treatment. I don't know whether, it used to be said at least, that these cases were the hardest to cure and that there was a high degree of recidivism. I don't know whether the state of the counseling or therapeutic art has changed to improve the prognosis for these people. I don't know whether we can generalize about them in any way, in any case, or whether certain people have good outlooks for cure and certain people don't. We ought to be able to make those kinds of distinctions. And if so, whether our statute needs to be more finely tuned to take care of those who can be helped and those who can't be helped. But my point is, at present time, we just sort of wholesale people, warehouse them for years after their offense, and may not have adequate differentiations among them. And all of this, of course, is extremely costly, not to speak of the fact that some victims and courts may be reluctant to act in the first place because of the severity of the, of the sentence. So those are areas I think might be helpful to explore. That they're hard areas because of the public outcry. It's kind of it's a touchy area, and it's an easier one to walk away from. But I think it may be a responsibility to look in it and see where we are.
Thank you.
Would anyone care to respond?
Yeah, I've got several thoughts. I think you stated the case very accurately when you essentially talked about the difficulty in deciding when do you treat, right after the arrest, when they're probably most receptive to treatment. At that point, they're feeling badly about being incarcerated and probably more receptive to treatment. But then there's always the danger that if they sit then for 3 years after they've been treated because they have their presumptive sentence, do they become embittered? Does the treatment start to wear off? So anyway, that's a judgment call. We did choose to treat at the end of the sentence, right prior to their reentry to the community, just really more for safety reasons than anything else. But I do have one, I guess, idea or thought about one thing we could do with the sex offenders. I've tried to interest the private sector in starting something along the lines of Northwest Treatment Associates, which is an outpatient treatment, sex offender treatment program in Seattle that is really quite good. And I really haven't been successful. Some people have, some psychologists and psychiatrists have come back and said, well, if you could get us seed money for 1 year, we could probably make it pay for itself thereafter. There are some second and third degree sex offenders who don't have presumptive sentences who probably are safe to treat in a very good community treatment program, and it would really have to be a top-notch one, something along the lines of Northwest. Otherwise, I don't think it would be a safe program, but that might be one way to get some of the sex offenders that are currently spending time in prison out and then free up some of the treatment beds in prison for the more long-term. They would have to have a suspended imposition of sentence hanging over their heads in order to make sure that they went into treatment and stayed in.
But we can't do that under our existing law. The court can't grant.
Can you have a pretrial diversion in that kind of thing? Could you do that?
The best way to do it would be after they've been convicted, but prior to sentencing, have the psychologist go in and do the evaluation, decide whether they're a good risk for community treatment, and then at sentencing, the judge would then suspend imposition of sentence on the condition that they completed treatment.
Are any of the sex offenders getting out early because of this?
None of the presumptive ones, certainly. Are any, for example, going to...
We have sex offenders that are not under presumptive sentence.
Yes, we do. Yes.
Is that left or on the wall?
Well, you're speaking of third degree...
Second, third degree.
Second. Not the first degree.
Well, I can understand some. I can understand a little better, I think, why our overviews are kind of just we need more beds and we got more population type overviews or briefings. But and I you must be very frustrated as well on trying to achieve some of your goals. So I do think we need. Start some lines of communication. And I think we need to start looking at what needs to be done to relieve, if there's any truth at all in this thing that's been passed out to us, but it isn't, it's a waste of time for us to read. If there's any indications in here of trends that we're looking at, then certainly we need to be working together to solve the problem. And I guess what we're saying is, we don't know how to help you. Because we have nothing to react to, you know? So let's just see what we can do about it. You ready?
Sure.
I agree, Madam Chairman. We'll give you some ideas as to how you may be able to help us.
If you could have someone that you could spare a little bit. I know your time is, of your people is real wrapped up. Believe me, so are mine and the rest of ours. But I'm sure we can find some people available on our side, if you can on yours, and we can ask some people from the courts, and we can ask some people for health and social services, or at least one, to start sitting down and looking at some alternatives for us to at least consider.
Madam Chair? As part of that, I go back to an earlier request, though. I would really like to have some analysis of what those various facilities are, you know, what their mandate is, and in a sense, how they're being used. I think that's just an absolute critical thing, not that, that perhaps we have the expertise around this table to determine where those people go, but I think it would help us understand the magnitude of the current situation as opposed, you know, if we just keep adding people onto that, just buying ourselves another Clery case by not taking action. And if there's a sense, it's always a question of having to meet, I guess, the squeaky wheel. But for us to wait when we know what's happening in the revenue stream and not start to address it, just I can't in good conscience accept that. We just have to find a way. If it's that much of a priority and there's a real need, then we better take some serious discussion about solving it. And unless we know where the department wants to go, when we get a good idea, like the Restitution Center, I co-sponsored it. I thought that was great. Corrections after we worked told us it was great. But we shouldn't be doing things that may be great in another system. If that's not the priority, then we ought to be doing the priority things. And I have a sense of unease that we're not living up to our responsibility if we don't have the information so we know what has to be done. So, you know, I apologize if we're laying it on you, but somebody's got to help us find those answers. And we, you know, we obviously don't have them at this point.
Senator, we'll provide you with any kind of information that we possibly can to help you and us come to some mutual plan of attack on the problem.
Are there further questions, members of the committee? Dan, we thank you very much for arousing some questions in our minds and being with us today. And let's keep it going. Committee's adjourned.